perhaps, you know, the world's greatest sporting precinct right in the shadows of one of the world's greatest cities.
I used to love the roar of the crowd.
Magnificent mark taken by Roy Carter.
A Viking is in the time.
He gets inside, well inside.
In any weather you can see a speaking ring. Listening to the skin, you're not really behind the chair.
Oh, Cochin, just a little bit of genius.
And welcome back to Richmond Tiger Talk. My name's Nick.
And I'm Andy.
Oh boy. We're $14 for the flag. It's not quite as exciting as the moment when we were about $13 at halftime of the Swans game. Yeah, but it's pretty close. Yeah, if you wanna bet on us making the final, you get $1.10. Which is not very much. Is it time to believe? Is it time to stop worrying?
So to me, the game was, I still wasn't, I was still more worried about dropping out of the top eight than making the top four. So that to me was what the game was. Now, if we can sort of come back to what it means the future. I think the stories in the press about the Tigers winning a flag, can the Tigers win a flag, is the product of people, you know, who have to fill hundreds of hours of
content every week,
meaningless football content each week.
At $13, it does mean that it's, you know, in the realm of the possible. It doesn't mean in any way it's likely, but it does mean that it's possible.
It's not, like, if you look at the proper bookmakers, which pay decent odds, it's closer to $17, isn't it? And we're still like the fifth favourite, aren't we?
Yeah, but equal fourth or so, yeah.
I mean, it's still it's still a lot better than we are, but that's only relative to being one of the worst professional sports teams for a long time. But it's certainly it's getting to the point.
And it's fair to say that coming into the season, it wasn't with particularly high expectations.
Exactly, but yeah, I want to come back to this. Look, I think the hot takes about can we win a premiership, like, we could potentially win a premiership, but whether that game makes you any closer is the evidence you need, or the last two games are the evidence you need compared to what the same hot take merchants were saying about Richmond 2 weeks ago. I don't think that's enough evidence to do a 180 in your opinion of the team.
No, but it is. I mean, it's an accumulation of consistent performance, which is nice. The odds are, I mean, we are starting with a lot of statistics even for us, but we're only just under 50% to finish in top four, and that really would be dizzying.
Yes, but I mean, the statement of itself says so much, but yes, I mean, the fact that it is really exciting that we now have a chance to be a top four team, it is genuinely, but I don't think it is, it's time to believe in a few weeks' time when we keep winning.
I know. Yeah. And look, there's still, I've just in researching St Kilda, yeah, I made myself a bit nervous. There's certainly ways for us to lose.
Oh, absolutely. Actually, I've just checked and we're the sixth most likely to win a flag.
Okay.
So
maybe there was a burst of optimism on the weekend when I checked.
Could have been. Maybe Richmond supporters tweaked the market. Anyway, Nick, I wanted to talk a bit about my first reaction to the game. So, Nick, I watched the game in a bad time zone. I wasn't in Australia. It was a Saturday night. Had some red wines and heavy carby meal. I was watching it. It was after midnight. And a friend of the podcast, we're exchanging messages on a private chat, and you know who you are, I won't name them, but it was early in the third quarter, and I wasn't actually watching the game at that moment, but they messaged, I can feel a 10-goal loss coming. So I went to bed. And I woke up at 4 a.m., saw what happened, and watched the game immediately on replay at 4 a.m. In a hotel room. Man by himself in hotel room watching video. Normally it's something else on a lonely Saturday night. But, yeah, watched it. So I've got a slightly different perspective on the game for the excitement of those who actually lived through it live. But it must have been, it was pretty special when we started coming back in the third, wasn't it?
Oh, look, it was great. I mean, the defense was really good. I think I made my first note about how good the defense was in the first quarter. And towards the end of the second quarter, they got away a little bit. But we were holding up the whole time, so it did always feel feasible that it would come back. We could come back. I must say, I didn't feel it was likely, but you know, once it started happening, and you know, the whole question of momentum's a funny one, but it really, and then especially in that last quarter, you know, of course I was really worried at the time, but. Watching it on replay, we did have a lot more run. There was a lot more bent over Port Adelaide players not able to keep up as we did a fast break transition. And it is, each Richmond side is flawed in its own way, but this one is reasonably lovable in its flaws for just how exciting it is when it comes off.
Well, it's very eccentric in that it does much better if it's losing at half time. And that sort of, it's the only team in the AFL, so unless, you know, the goal kicking is a bit modern football. A lot of teams are having bad goal kicking stretches, but this weird thing of, being bad after half time and we're winning and vice versa, that is just a Richmond thing, basically. We did it again.
It's a little 2017, the way that teams are prone to these surges, but we've taken it to a whole another level.
We're the only team that's systemically doing it. Like, we're the only one that has a pattern that most other teams...
That's quite as extreme, yeah.
Yeah, most other teams, if they're winning, they increase their lead on average, and vice versa. We don't. Mm-hmm. Whatever we're doing, we do the opposite in the second half.
I know, yeah.
Anyway, so
it was a great second half. I mean, we're at risk of repeating ourselves ad nauseum about Dusty. But where do you want to start?
Just while we're still doing the aggregate, like, I hate talking about when we lose and we've shot poorly for goal. It just makes it worse to talk about the goal kicking for me because it just feels like missed opportunity. And it's happened so many weeks.
Port did miss some opportunities.
Yep. So it's happened several times this year that on expected shots we should have won, and in games what we actually lost. And, you know, you hope goal kicking is random and you'll get it back. And we got it back. We lost that game on expected shots. Expected shots aren't everything, by the way, because if you kick points, you often get repeat shots. But we lost that game on expected shots. But we won on the scoreboard, and that's happened to us more times the other way. So this was an even upper. So, you know, if you look at the GWS game, flip the stats, it's basically a bit what happened. This was an even upper, and so we can stop flagellating ourselves for a while about the frustrating losses early in the
week.
Yeah. And, you know, Nick, you know, this was a victory for reversion to the mean that, you know, the statistical god, there'd been 5 reds in a row and we got a black. Anyway.
I know, which you messaged me at some ungodly hour on Sunday morning.
Yes. I don't think there'd been. It's unusual to have so many explanation marks after this statement. Revision to the mean. Reversion to the mean.
Did you have a favourite goal when we were coming back?
Oh, I'm really glad you asked. Like the three in the middle was really exciting. Unless you're going to say the Butler game, the goal, but that was sort of out of the blue. I think it's got to be one of the quarter. Three, doesn't it? Don't you think?
It does.
The three late in the third?
Yep, absolutely.
And which one did you choose?
Well, I really liked the Dan Rioli goal. I mean, at least in part because it was Dan Rioli. Yeah, the Dusty one was perhaps the best passage of play. But,
yeah, and there's a moment where Dusty and Jack, they sort of communicate and... From a long way away, Dusty calls out Jack to go to the square so that Jack clears out the space. And this is long before Dusty's even got the ball. It's special. One nice thing about the Dusty goal, I tweeted this out, is you can hear the crowd. It's 80 meters out and Dusty's only just started breaking for space. And you can hear the crowd go, whoa, because they know he's going to score. And it's not guaranteed at all that was any other player that he will score that, but you just knew that Dusty was going to score, and that was the third of the three goals. God, it was a special player such as a play, wasn't it?
It was great.
I love the second Stengel goal after the of the Jack screamer.
Yeah, actually, talking about a passage of play, that might be the favourite. Although the Butler goal in the second quarter. As well, you know, that...
Yeah.
Oh, it's so much fun.
Yep, okay, so Dusty is now leading the coaches' votes. He's ahead of Danger. So
I think he's leading in the AFL's Brownlow predictor as well.
Yeah, Brownlow, though, it's not, you know, let's be honest. Brownlow's a big night. It's good because you get to see the players' girlfriends, but it's not as meaningful, I think, as the coaches' vote.
I'd really like, though, for Dusty to call Aaron Edwards up on stage.
Fantastic. Yeah, that would be great. But, yeah, he is playing amazingly.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, you look at our third quarter comeback, and, you know, the stats speak for themselves.
Oh, yeah.
You know, 36 touches.
He was huge.
11 score involvements. But, you know, when he only had four clearances, but I think three of those four happened in the third to spark our comeback. Like he really did so much to win that game.
Oh yeah, it was. I thought he was clearly our best player. Alex Rance. I think it was Alex Rance, our second best player.
No, according to Champion, it was Kane Lambert.
So
very unusually for us, we've actually started at the top.
I thought he was great.
But the thing I noticed, you know, he wasn't just accumulating. He started to get sort of those really, difficult, contested balls that only top quality mids do. And, you know, he doesn't always do, you know, break the play open with it because he's in the middle of a pack. But, you know, he's in tight work is just getting better and better. And he's just in amazing form, and he keeps hitting new higher plateaus. I mean, presumably he's going to have a bad game soon because he just can't keep getting better. He's really, like, if you were to compare, go back to and do a montage of what he's doing in close and then do, say, a montage of Prestia, and look at the cleanness of his hands, Lambert's hands. He's in superb form.
He is in really good pen. Actually, speaking of Prestia, one thing I noticed about his work, he is quite disruptive when the other team has the ball, sort of slapping the ball away and getting in the way of handballs and stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, his overall output still not quite what I'd like it to be, but... I thought he was working pretty hard defensively.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that people say about him, that he tests really well for defensive money. But I think he's lost confidence. Like, I did notice he was fumbly with the ball on the weekend.
Yeah, and particularly after he dislocated his finger.
But even before then, is true. But he actually dislocated his finger because he fumbled a ball he should have picked up.
Whilst fumbling.
Yes. And the reason I keep bringing him up every week is because I so want him to do well.
I know.
You go back to what we need to win a premiership. To me, him playing like him being in our top five players every week, that would be something where you could go, well, that's the extra gear. That's the fifth gear we need to get the premiership. Gear. So I'm hanging on Prestia every week to
play. Oh, really? I just fantasize about a, you know, four quarter orgy of small forwards going crazy.
Indeed. Anyway, but that's why I talk him out every week. So, Nick, I want to summarise next game. Do we need to say anything about... Oh, I guess other than Rance being his usual brilliant self in the second half, it was good he got through that you know, frankly, quite clever tagging job that the Port did. Also,
he's a big boy, Trengrove, who did... did make me think about whether or not I'd want him as a sort of general utility player. So he would sort of solve a few problems at once. But yeah, then Rance pantsed him as a key forward, and then I thought, oh, well, you are sort of recruiting him primarily as a key forward, and he should be good rather than just useful at his primary function.
Yeah, and he wasn't even playing. He wasn't playing second ruck. He was Westhoff was.
Actually, speaking of Westhoff, I really liked how they started off. Well, they tried at varying stages. Westhoff up forward in quite a big forward setup, and yeah, he had McIntosh stood him a few times and held up nicely.
Theory on the internet, McIntosh is being groomed to eventually play taller. McIntosh also got beaten in some one-on-one marking contests later, so we'll see. Ryder and Westhoff were the two best, highest port-rated players. So there was a very indicative scene. So I don't think it's... And Nank was, by the way, our fourth-rated player.
I saw that. It was one of those classic Nank games. Yeah, he had 21 disposals, which is a lot. Yeah, Ryder was very influential.
There was a classic play on the third, which I think highlights a bit how we're using Nank. And yes, we're losing the matchup, but we're using Nank's strength to the absolute maximum, which is, you know, what we have to do, because guess what? There's no alternative to Nank in the twos. You know, Soldo's coming on all right, but, you know, we've got to just use Nank the best way we can. Ryder took an intercept mark. Port player kicked to him. Ryder was playing against Caddy. Ryder predictably outmarked Caddy and then kicked it into the forward 50, where he kicked it straight to Nank, who had dropped back as a loose man in defence. And I think that was a very indicative Caddy outmatched against opposition ruckman, but then opposition can't fully capitalise on it because Nank does a smart play in general play. So yeah, that's where we are. The opposition ruckman keeps being the other team's best player, but Nank keeps doing just enough that we don't lose games.
I know, good times. before we get on to the small forwards, and look, other people have picked up on this as well, but I really like Connor Menadue's fourth quarter. That was, he had other little patches of play, but yeah, that was a fourth quarter. He just seemed to have three or four, sequences where he really strung it together, which he hasn't done a lot. So yeah, it's good.
Well, I'm on the Connor hype train. But tell you something to add to what we said last week about him. There's something special there. He has high upside. He had 16 possessions overall, and 14 of those came in the second and fourth quarter. So he had 2 7 touch quarters. He has 4 7 touch quarters. He has 28 in his BOG. The way he plays. Well, maybe not with Martin. With Martin playing, but one of the best players on the ground.
Yeah. No, I agree. And, you know, it was his kick that set up that beautiful mark by Jack. It's an interesting question who the quickest player on the team is. Like, after a decade of it being Lids, you know, there's 6 or 7 contenders, but he's genuinely quick when he gets going.
He is, and he finishes games strongly. He has a habit of going. He has a habit of going on long runs late in the game.
Yeah. Well, he tested for both speed and endurance, so it's nice to see it translating.
And he's one who very much the good things he does. He's so much benefited by the current game plan.
Definitely. I thought Grimes held up pretty well on Robbie Gray.
Yep, he went down Media Street and held up. Actually had one of his highest rating games. Plenty of... he had 10 contested possessions. He's just in superb form right now, so he's about ready to tear his hamstring from the bone. Nick, quite tribute to Caddy. After a pretty quiet first three quarters had 11 disposals in the last quarter and 28 pressure acts. I sort of liked his solid ball linking work this week.
No, well, actually, speaking of solid half-forward mids, I thought Shane Edwards wasn't very good this week, but he was up and about at the start this week. Oh, yeah, he was better.
Oh, wasn't very good last week, you mean?
Yeah, yeah, oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. It's a much better game, and what I like about Titch's game and why the AFL ratings loves him is he plays through the centre of the ground. So if he gets you 20 to 22, he's still a viable, good player for us, you know.
I know
he, for one season or so, he got well above 20, but, you know, if he can just play at that level, he's still a good player for us.
Yeah. So the Tyson, did you see Tyson Stengel's jumper presentation?
I didn't watch did Balm say anything interesting?
Well, he gave him the right jumper, which was a concern.
Boom, boom, yeah.
Oh, no, look, I love a debut, and actually went back, and as you do, and looked up some of his under-18 footage, and VFL footage as well, and it's really translated. Like, he's good at, you know, breaking tackles or partially breaking tackles and disposing of the ball calmly. He's not going to break away the way that Rioli or Bolton is likely to do. But he's different to our other players and our other small forwards. Quite a nice kick for goal on very limited evidence. But yeah, no, it was fun. I don't think he's got the same potential in midfield, but he is. He was absolutely elite at ground ball gets as a junior.
Yeah, there's something special there. I mean, you know, stating the obvious, he's very elusive and he's strong through the hips. He held up one time in the tackle very well and was able to dump off.
Yeah, you think that, well, he's 18. What a couple of years of AFL weight training is going to do for that ability.
He played the least amount of game time I've ever seen of a Richmond player that didn't get injured in the game.
Huh.
And still kicked two goals with eight positions.
He took a while to get into the game, but I think as he picked up the tempo, it was a nice debut.
Yeah, it was nice, really interesting. I don't think they can drop him after 1 week, but you know, good, after a two goal performance, it is hard. Like this, well, let's get into it. Like, because I mean, George was unbelievably frustrating already. But he's also the bravest of the small forwards. Like, he's the one that does the crazy thing, occasionally dashes into a pack, or like Mike
Dusty
shouldn't.
And he was the one who set up that beautiful Dusty goal in the third quarter.
And he's also the one who, I think the 1980s are calling you Nick, they want their phone back. He's probably the strongest in the air of the four.
Yes, I'd say so.
So, like, there's lots of things he does right, but he's infuriating.
Oh my god! Body language doctor noticed a couple of things at the end of the game, but one of them was people were getting into George for his two missed shots in that fourth quarter.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, and I think Hardwick commented on it because that left foot snap he had that came off the shin. He was sort of directly in front. That might be one of the worst shots of goal I've ever seen.
Yeah, you have to go back to some peak Richo efforts, I think.
But, like, he was directly in front, so he wasn't like he was shooting an angle.
Richo missed one from the middle of the centre of the goal square once.
But the ball finished further away from the goals than when he kicked it. But, like, I was thinking about this. What do you do, Nick? Because, like, Hardwick actually said something which I love to hear. The first time I've heard something like this, we're going to rotate the small forwards. I think what he really needs is to play a game in the twos, get lots of the football and get the touch of it. But on the other hand, he's still young. He's had a bruising season. Maybe the best thing for him to do would be to drop him and rest him. Like, I don't know how you manage him.
Oh, yeah. I don't think there's a right answer, and maybe you don't need the one answer. Maybe you just keep having a bit of a rotation.
Well, yes, with the other ones, yes, but I just don't know. I find George is the most frustrating of them.
He's pretty frustrating.
Well, he's the conundrum.
He's the conundrum. I haven't checked recently. Maybe Butler's gone ahead of him, but he was also the one who'd kicked the most goals, which...
Yeah. But Butler's consistently, his overall stats are much better.
Yeah, but and he's more consistent game to game as well.
Yeah, and obviously was brilliant on the weekend. Rioli.
Yeah, although I think Shai Bolton's first half from a couple of weeks ago, that perhaps remains the... George has had a very good quarter, but that Shai Bolton half was pretty special as well.
I loved it. A friend of the podcast, you know who you are, made a great call on the weekend that he's convinced that people are miscounting Rioli's stats because it always feels like he's done more at the end of the game.
True.
Because he had six on the weekend, but you know it felt like he was a crucial part of the game.
Yeah, no. And I think he was it. At some key points. I thought, look, if you were going to be critical, that I thought Markov wasn't great. And yeah, Sammy Lloyd was fine. I did have a moment where I thought, maybe you could go with five small forwards.
Probably he does occasionally get asked to sort of sit down, get set. The ball sat down on him in the marking contest. So,
All right. Let's come back to this when we talk about the VFL.
And just quickly before I want to move on to Dimmer's press conference. But Jaden Short again had one of his best games.
Oh
like,
yeah,
high
yeah,
possession no. count sort of made Liked up it. The absence of Hooley. A lot of meters gained.
And he finally kicked one of those really big long goals as well.
Yeah, good point.
He's tried a few.
Yeah. Anyway, it was. It's sort of, he's starting to get a bit of love now, which is long overdue.
Well deserved.
He's a good, damn good player.
I know. Yeah. Short, Gastegna and Lambert off the 2014 rookie draft.
Yeah, good point. It's amazing what happens when, like, it's, you know, it's been so important to the success of the team this year and, you know, made up for the... You know, if I told you at the start of the year that Lennon and Coriolis have given us sweet FA, you would have thought, that's trouble. You know, Prestia hasn't been that good for us either. I would have said, you would have said,
going to be a rough year.
I don't know what our upside, but you know, who would have predicted that Kane Lambert has, you know, turned into, like right now, this is over the top, but like right now, he's a better than average third midfielder. Just based on the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, plus the amazing plethora of small forwards.
Oh, yeah, and lots of other things too, yeah, but yeah. Mm. Just going back to your rookie draft quick. All right, Nick, I want to talk, going back to your point about optimism, I want to talk about Dimmer's post-game press conference.
Okay.
Now, you can tell we're good again because I occasionally care what Dimmer says. Because for a long time I stopped listening.
I know. Your therapist had words about that.
His comment at fan day to tell Richmond fans to stay loyal was not my favourite moment of bonding with a coach. But he said two things. He said interesting. One, he acknowledged publicly the first time there'd been a step change in the way we played, but he was sort of. Considering, like, just forget the past history when it comes to finals. We play differently now.
Mm.
Okay, great. Yep. And anyone who's watching the team could see they are playing differently. But the second thing is, Nick, it was, in Dimmer's very polite way, it was almost like a pro wrestling manager interview. Because he was, like, saying, you know, he was sort of a little bit with a set jaw saying, mark my words, we're going to get a lot better from here. Like he was pretty damn confident, and I was just thinking, like, goddamn, I hope he's right. Like, you know, this is. Yeah. I mean, like, this is going back to the point you started with. What more can this team do? Like, it's a fascinating year, because it's just we have such obvious flaws, but it's sort of the flaws are also a virtue. You know, the lack of second forward ruck has meant that we also have, you know, this fantastic forward pressure. So it's sort of, this is genuinely uncharted territory. And I was just sort of, the question I've been mulling over my head, I'd like your opinion on, and, you know, this is something we can come back to in future weeks, is there any precedent for this? Is there a team that's sort of being so short in its forward half, and relied so much on small forwards being sort of a successful sort of top four team?
It's a good question. I'm gonna have to repress the urge to go diving back into, you know, because there have been teams with some famous mosquito fleets, but they're normally with pretty conventional centre half forward, full forward setups. Like it's just,
yeah, I
can't think of anyone who's played this long with just one key forward.
Yeah, and this team was with really bad second forwards, but they played some stiff to at least create a contest, and then to set up the small forwards. Like, this is just, I can't see how any conversation about Richmond's premiership chances doesn't, you know, yes, we'll play really consistent good football, and yes, we're in every game. That's true, obviously, but like, this is the crucial, interesting intellectual question, which I don't have an answer for, but I'm going to keep thinking about.
Well, let's come back to this one. Do you want to talk about the VFL or anything else from the game? Cool. Well, the VFL had a close win against Essendon, which is actually there. I think they're still outside of the finals, but well in the hunt. And actually, speaking of Hunt, I did have a moment of weakness where I wondered if Taylor Hunt might be more useful than Oleg Markov this week, and I kind of hate myself for it.
Well, we talked about the week before how impressed I was we picked Oleg instead of Hunt, and Hunt must have been listening, or was presumably aware of his own status and annoyed by his own status in the team, and, you know, did pull out a cracker, to his credit.
Mm. He did, yeah. I mean, you know, we can almost play pre-recorded footage of Miles going well.
What do you think about this idea, Nick?
Mm-hmm.
Is there any potential for Miles to come into the midfield and Cochin to go out to a flank? I don't think so, but that's what you'd have to do, I think, is to push Cochin out.
That's what you'd have to do. I think, well, maybe you give someone a rest as well towards the end of the year. That's the other thing I was thinking of.
Yeah, maybe. It's just, he's just playing so well.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And just ridiculously consistent. Look, we actually messaged about this, that someone else is playing really consistently who we've perhaps talked about less than any other Richmond national draftee of recent memory, Nathan Broad. Going well.
Yep, absolutely. Getting plenty of the ball. And I've never thought about Nathan Broad, but someone else suggested to us that maybe he's another one who would play better in the current Richmond team. I don't know, because he got a bad rap because he played in those two games where we were getting flogged and looked terrible. You know, maybe it would be nice if he got another chance.
Yeah. No. It would seem a shame that if his contract's up at the end of the year and that, you know, he's playing really good football, but yeah, he didn't get another go, but yeah, who knows?
What comes to come?
I've been very disciplined by not starting with these two, but Jack Graham played his sort of first full game of VFL, 17 disposals, 8 tackles, 6 clearances, and a very nice goal. Like, yeah, I mean, I was intrigued by him already, but I like the cut of his jib.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, obviously, it's obvious what needs to happen next for him to come into the ones, but, yes, he's done nothing to quell the growing excitement. Just wait till he has a 25-touch game.
I know. Look, the question, he's always a big accumulator as a junior, cracks in hard with tackles. Yeah, But he's looked pretty neat in his kicking so far, which was a question. So.
And the other problem is, like, let's say he gets 25 in the next few weeks. Is he playing in the Dusty Kotcher? You know, is he behind Miles in that hierarchy? Mm. Anyway, rich man's problems.
Well, and speaking of first year draftees, Ryan Garthwaite playing his second game as a key forward and accomplished himself reasonably nicely. Two first half goals. Quite importantly, I think he had four or five tackles, so he was providing some pretty good defensive pressure as well. And he's still not very big for a key forward, but he can take a mark. And if he does, if he can provide a target, take the occasional mark, provide good defensive pressure, yeah. You know, he was already in emergency this week. Is he getting close to a senior game?
Hard to know. Well, he's in the opposite position, isn't he? He's very much in the poor man's.
He has to play about one third as well as Green to get a game.
Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, it's obviously it's very exciting, and all eyes are on him in the VFL. It's hard to know. Like, I don't think you can promote someone to the AFL to play a key forward spot after kicking two goals in his career in the VFL. I don't know if he kicked any last year.
Two goals three over a fortnight.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we'll see. But again, the internet is watching his progress closely.
Anyone else from the VFL?
No, I mean, nope. I'm done.
Maybe Ochoa, I keep looking out for. Yeah, not happening.
He's getting worse, not better. Yeah.
Yeah, and, not encouraging.
And Corey Ellis didn't play.
I know. Are you worried about the Saints? I'm a bit worried about the Saints.
Yeah, well, they've won three in a row.
They're genuinely eighth.
Yeah, so, like, but it's sort of, and they don't, but before they won three in a row, they lost three in a row, and they got flogged in all three of those games, pretty much. So
yeah. Curiously enough, their game on the weekend was the first close game, like, under two goals that they've played all season. I was like, oh, wow, that must be relaxing.
Yeah, it's true, actually. I've got it in front of me now. And, that basically, you know, they absolutely pants the Hawks. God, that must have been satisfying. But you know, the week before, the Cats flogged them by, you know, 40 points. So, yeah, it's the way of their season, isn't it? I don't know. They're a really hard team to get a feel for. And, I mean,
They've got this sort of band of fairly, you know, B-grade midfielders. But they've got quite a few of them. They've got, I think, more of them than teams normally do, even if they don't have that quite top-end depth. Like, nobody ever confuses Sebastian Ross for a really top-end player, but he's productive, and Billings is doing his poor man's Dusty impersonation. And, you know, they've got some solid key forwards in Membre and Bruce and 34-year-old Nick Riewoldt running around. So, you know, there's bits and pieces of a good team. Billy Long is going to give Nank a hard time in the tap outs. Like, he's a former top 10 draft pick. He's a pretty elite athlete, even if he doesn't get the ball very much.
Yeah, and once again, the bookmakers don't like us very much.
It's about two goals.
Yeah, it's about two goals. But it's sort of, you know, we are clearly, well, it's fourth playing eighth. Yeah, it's 10 points. Fourth playing eighth. And, still, we can't get no respect. They're coming back from one less day's break. They're coming back from a pretty tough game at Domain Stadium. So hopefully that'll go in our favour. I think the Etihad Stadium hoodoo is thoroughly broken, don't you?
We talked about that before.
Exactly.
You know, it rewards explosive pace, and whereas sort of the MCG almost more rewards endurance. But, you know, that's not a problem.
Yeah. I mean, the downside with it is that the conditions will be perfect for marking, so that's not going to help our ability to create the contest in the forward line. But, yeah, look, it's... I'm quietly confident. God, I'd love just a less stressful game.
I know, and then Brisbane the week after, you know, Brisbane showing signs of life, but, you know, our form against them has been really good, so...
And it is in Melbourne, so, you know,
it's in Melbourne. Yeah.
It's a really good chance. And there are still cheap tickets available to Etihad, so there's no excuse not for a couple of Tiger fans to turn up for a change.
Are we number one on the AFL for attendance?
I think so, but we just hate that ground, don't we?
Yeah, we do.
it almost feels like there was a decent contingent at Port Adelaide.
I know, bless them. Yeah, and we heard from a few of them. Seemed to have a pretty good time.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, it's a traditional rivalry. Actually, you know, we mocked it, and there's been some pretty memorable games against Port. You know, we played a draw against them fairly recently, Richo's 200th. There's a couple of games, and obviously the final was a fairly memorable game. Like, there's... Actually, we have had we've had more interesting games against them recently than, say, Adelaide.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. Oh, well, I'm Nick.
I'm Andy.
We're Richmond Tiger Talk.